Welcome to this episode of the Strong Kind Podcast. This episode is with Dr. Sam Amadeo. She is a neurologic clinical specialist. She's a physical therapist. We talked a lot about stroke recovery and how the system that we currently have does not serve people amazingly well. And Sam is actively working to change that with her business and with her Instagram. She's putting out information to try to help people recover from stroke and just continue to work on improving skills so that they can live with less problems post neurologic incident. It was a great conversation. I really appreciated having Sam on as someone who's worked in these settings previously before going out on my own. I just really resonate with what she's trying to do and how important it is. Strokes and neurologic incidents are things that undoubtedly a lot of us will come into contact with as we, you know, take care of older individuals in our family. It's one of those things that nobody ever really sees coming. Yeah, but when it does, it drastically changes people's lives. And Sam's doing good work to try to help people recover and get back to living as well as they can. So hope you enjoy this podcast. Thanks for being here. All right. So Sam, you are a neuro rehab specialist. What's the exact, is it NCS?
It's NCS. Yeah. So board certified neurologic clinical specialist.
Did you go to PT school thinking you were going to go into neuro, or did you come out on from physical therapy school thinking neuro, or what happened there?
So I actually thought of, I always wanted to do neuro because I loved just like neuroanatomy and like always like loved, like I was just fascinated by that part of like the body in general. But, and then in addition to that, like I wasn't really a huge sports person. Well, never was, not huge, but I just was not a sports person.
Okay.
So, it's not like I played any sports. So like I didn't have a connection to other parts of PT. But I always had the fear of like when I entered PT school that I wasn't going to actually like neuro, but I did stick with it. I was always not sure if it was going to be pediatrics or adults. I do currently work with pediatrics as well, because it is fun and it's just like a good opportunity. But my heart is with adult neuro.
Yeah. What makes you say that?
There's just something about, I think just in general, as like a population, it's a really great population to see so much improvement and so much change. And it really is a life-changing event to be a part of. So not only am I seeing huge improvements, but there's so much adversity that these people go through. And it's not like a kid who's born with a disability that's never known anything different. You're literally taking someone's independence away from them.
Yeah.
So there's a huge level of, you know, psychological impact on these people. In addition to like, I love working in a team. So it's so fun to be able to collaborate and see things from different perspectives, you know, collaborate with speech therapists, occupational therapists, doctors, orthotist, all those different people. Like I love being on a team. So that was very fun for me to be able to be creative, not just with myself, but with others to give the best care.
Yeah. Yeah. So, cause me and you were briefly chatting about like, kind of, I learned the most, I'm going to be honest. So I was like a personal trainer and then I did CrossFit. I am the sports guy who went to PT school. I almost went to medical school and looking back, I'm very glad that I didn't. But I think I've learned the most. I was also on a neuro floor. I was a nursing assistant on a neuro,
floor,
before PT school. And, just like neuro rehab. Yes. There is like, a lot of, it is different, but in very many ways it is the same. It is repetition of challenging tasks. It is understanding the goal of something and like helping somebody figure out a way to accomplish that goal, finding adaptive equipment, managing energy, managing
Oh,
fatigue,
yeah.
right? And it just reinforced a lot of like stuff for me when I and also my favorite job was when me and my wife were working, aside from my own business, which I very much love, but me and my wife worked in a rehab hospital, and it was awesome because you get to spend a lot. I mean, there was hard times, don't get me wrong, but you get to spend a lot of time with people,
Yes, that too.
and in where like the outpatient setting, especially like crummy clinics, it's not that fun. It's there's still always people in your day that made it really cool. But let's talk about like, yeah, how tough it is, how tough the mental side of the like a neurologic event is for people, or the degeneration of, not, I don't even like using that word, or the decline associated with something like Parkinson's. What have you seen? And because then we're going to go into like why you're doing what you're doing from a business and helping people in a different way standpoint. But yeah, what are the things, like, people know, oh, they had a stroke, that must be physically challenging, and we're going to talk about that, but like what are the emotional and the mental things as well?
I think unfortunately a lot of people see it as not superficial, but they see it as very, you lost that physical capability, but I don't think it comes off as obviously that when you lose the physical ability to do things, you lose a lot of your independence and decision making as a person. So it's not just, oh, I'm having difficulty with walking. It's that because I can't walk or because I can't transfer or I can't drive, I now have to rely on so many other people in my life, which not only takes a lot of autonomy away from the person, but it gives you the feeling of now I'm a burden. So
Yeah.
I think that a lot of these people, I mean, I've even worked with young stroke survivors, like 30s, right after, like postpartum, after they've given birth and they've had some devastating hemorrhagic stroke, where you're entering this new, you're in life to take care of other people. And now, you're a mom, you're a dad, and that's what your role is to take care of others, and now everyone is taking care of you. So it's a huge role reversal, in addition to that feeling of being a burden to other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it, because of the, there's not a lot of clarity in when things will get better or if they will get better. So it's not like, okay, I broke my leg, 8 to 10 weeks, I do the rehab and I know that bone's going, it's a lot of mystery of when am I going to recover, how much will I recover. So you've lost control, these people have lost control, and the little bit of control that they would like to have is knowing when things will return to normal, but they may not return to normal. So I think the loss of independence, the feeling of being a burden, and then the huge question mark of where you can't even project the trajectory of your life afterwards, for a very long period of time.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting, well, there's two big things in there. Yeah, the stroke, like, it's one thing for, it's like, it's never good, but it's one thing for it to happen to somebody when they're 80 years old, right? But it's the thing that people don't see until it's like, happens to a loved one, is like when it happens to a young person, or a relatively young person, or like a mom, who has a stroke during, oh man, I like, my brain was going there like 2 months ago, when my wife was having a kid, right? And that's also like the hard part of being a medical professional, is like you legitimately like see things that you never would have been aware of, and it gets tricky, right? Because then, but yeah, like that level of, that was always something that struck me, was, it is it when one person, who was independent, like, is no longer that way, at least temporarily, right? And like, it is hard not to feel like you are a burden, right? To all the people around you. And if you're like, living life and, you know, things are generally good. And then you have some setback like this, it's really hard to find the meaning in it, right? Like, why me is a big thing, right?
And, you know, I think a lot of people look for that why, because it's almost comforting as to, you know, why did this happen? You know, me and the doctors are still trying to figure out what's going on. But there are so many things, like when I speak to people and I, you know, educate, I always just try to talk about like the things that you do have control over, even if you never find out why.
Yeah.
All of those modifiable risk factors that we can just do now or post-stroke are huge impactors for what you can actually physically do for yourself to prevent difficulties later on or to maximize what you have right now. So I hate to provide people with a list of to-dos, but when you're really searching for what, why, like holding on to the things that you do have control over does really help.
Yeah.
So I think offering whatever you can to someone is helpful. Like I was just working with someone the other day, one of my in-person clients, and when unfortunately her occupational therapist in outpatient discharged her because she has a lot of spasticity in her arm, but she never taught her how to dress herself, compensatory patterns and equipment to put on shoes and socks, and you know, which is just mind-boggling to me. So that's something we've worked on, and I'm like, we can use your right arm just in a different way right now. And then just to know that, you know, there is some function there. There is some purpose to having this arm still gives a little bit of help just mentally knowing like, okay, maybe I can't use it completely right now, but I can use it. So trying to put a little bit of positive in use, even when things are as grim as they possibly can be.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the tricky things, like we're always humans are always trying to create meaning, right? And the unfortunate nature of a lot of things in life is sometimes like stuff just happens. It can be really, really tricky. And it's really hard to move forward in life. Like moving forward is really hard into the uncertainty of life, especially when the past has maybe kind of beat you up a little bit, right? But it's also really hard because it's like life's already hard, right? And then like it just got harder, right? And if like went for somebody that's undergone a neurological event or they've had a problem, right? And it is like, I don't want to say are you, but I'm like, are you familiar with like post-traumatic growth?
I don't know if I'd say that specific term, but like the person that you are after some sort of a trauma happens to you. Yes. Do you see my like, dog in the background just laying on the floor right there?
No.
That's really...
I see him now, but I love it. My Phoebe,
I just noticed him. I'm like, looks like there's a dead potato in the corner.
No, I'm like, I love it. What kind of dog do you have?
He's a mutt. He's like a miniature golden retriever looking thing.
See, I've already taken Phoebe, my dog, to the dog park once, and she's looking at me. I'm gonna take her again after we chat here, but it's crazy because she just wants to get outside and run. But yeah, I mean, so like post-traumatic stress is something happened. And life has changed, and you know, like to call things disorders or XYZ, I things are always hard, and some people have gone through some really hard stuff, right? But there's usually, again, like, and it's hard for me in my I've worked with people who have strokes, I've worked with people who have Parkinson's, I've helped be in the rehab process for people. It's hard to convey to people like that life can get good again, right?
Yes.
It almost feels like you're being kind of you know, for me it always kind of felt paternalistic or patronizing because they kind of have to prove it to themselves, right? And like I don't think anybody who like, you know, has a stroke where they lose function of their right arm and they can't walk as well as they used to, right? That like it's like, yeah, well, you'll still be able to, you can still walk to some degree and you can still like do a lot of things. Like It's like there's a disbelief that like you're being optimistic in their shitty situation, right? And
Yeah.
that's
I
kind of
always
hard.
feel like there's a huge spectrum. I feel like instead of it being a bell curve, it's like an opposite bell curve where I either have people who are completely negative, it's never gonna get better, and then the people who are unrealistically positive.
There's almost an overly optimistic. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's so right, right? There was a guy, I remember this so succinctly because I was like, man, he was, and it was sucky because our system was not set up. He should have been in the hospital for 6 weeks or more, right? And he was getting released in like after like 2 weeks, and he could barely transfer, right? So when I say transfer, just for anybody who's listening to this or watching, I'm talking about like transferring from his bed to a wheelchair using like a little bit of assistance in the form of like a slide board or something like that, or like a pivot. And his family was taking him home, and he was basically like saying how he was going to be walking in like 4 weeks, right? Or I, you know, and like, and I'm like, you in those situations, you're just like, man, you're not seeing the reality of where you're currently at right now. That's why acceptance of reality is probably one of my overarching like themes in life. Like, you got to accept where you really are, right? And the people who are so negative, they didn't see that, like, hey, I at least like some of them would be doing relatively well. They were transferring and moving in the right direction pretty quickly. And yeah, then that they were just not accepting the reality of that situation either, right? It's really hard.
Yeah, you see a lot of different personalities, and it's basically how these people are able to cope, where it's, the stages of grief. Are we in denial? Because the denial phase is the one where they're thinking that they can walk in, in a week. And then we have it's that mourning phase where they're really like down on themselves that how could this happen to me? What, I'm never going to be able to get to where I was or where I want to be. So there, it is a very tough topic to navigate just as a provider. I think like how you were saying too, like patronizing, where you don't want, I don't want to ever say to someone, I understand and I get it. It's more of like, I'm feeling hurt for you. Like, it's almost like I have to have empathy towards them, but there's no way I could ever understand what it's like because it's not me. So I always just like to try to use my experience and what I've seen before as, these are the best case scenarios, these are the worst case scenarios, but this is what's in your control. That if we were to make a tipping scale, if you did everything that's in your control, we're tipping more towards a positive prognosis and outcome than if we were to do the opposite. So, and given that, I mean, moving, kind of giving a little tip, like moving forward towards the mission of my business was really that, kind of like you said, a lot of people get discharged too soon, and unfortunately, it's just the way that healthcare is. Where I was just explaining it to a patient the other day that, there's a bundle payment system where it's like, okay, you had a stroke, the hospital gets paid 30 grand, no matter if you're there 3 days or 10 days. So guess what? They want to kick you out in 3 days because then they could get however many more other strokes in within 10 days. It's unfortunate. It's super unfortunate. So then you get tossed home.
Kind of effed up is what it really
And
Well, and it's also just, it is, it's really, really hard to take care of people. That's the reality of our situation, and we've kind of created this unfortunate system that we don't really help people stay healthy. And when people get sick, we don't really have the capacity to really treat them well for a long period of time, right? And the recovery process of a lot of things. So we're gonna get in this. I don't want to shoot us too far offside, but like, yeah. So keep going. But I want to ask you this though. You've mentioned a few times the things in people's control, right? What are typically the things in people's control?
There's a huge spectrum of it, but I would say more so for someone like if we're thinking about stroke, it's really the lifestyle modifications that you can make now that are going to set you up for success now and for the future. So we're going to maximize your recovery now because of these choices, but also we're going to prevent future issues in the future. So whether that be preventing an orthopedic condition from arising because we're doing good training now, or reducing obesity and all these other comorbidities that could make life for you harder and also put you in positions for worser health in the future. So I think like identifying things that you really do, you can physically change yourself to maximize where you are now and maximize where you're going. But in addition to that, I think your attitude and your outlook on the situation. So really being realistic and having a really good balance of feeling, you know, this is a devastating thing for me. It's a devastating thing for my family, but having this positivity or this motivation, having those more I guess actionable type feelings about where you currently are is just going to set you up for more success too. So really managing both like your physical things that you can do and then that mental health part of it, because that's all just going to put you in a positive trajectory. Even if that means right now you need help, or right now you need to focus on smaller things, it's kind of like you can't take care of others if you don't take care of yourself first. So, figuring out what you have, what you can do now for yourself, and to make yourself feel good for others as well. Ways that, you know, if you want to help your kids right now, how you can do that, how you can spend time in a positive way that's not, you know, that doesn't require too much work or too much energy for the whole family and yourself. You know, what does that look like right now? And being realistic about it, and then changing that mind as we go, because you're never really stuck where you're at. You just always want to evolve as you're going.
I think so much of the I mean, we've touched on it, but so much of it is like on in the rehab space as well, getting back the function and but like the motivation, like getting people to just see that things can get better, and the like the physical, I'm a big non-dualistic proponent. Like there's no real separation between the mind and the body for humans, right? Like, but the managing the mental side of it, right? Managing the fact that like it's gonna be harder for a long time. You're gonna have to also like there's a tremendous financial burden. Like it can be so scary. And depends on who you are and depends on what you have going, but like just even like putting in a ramp in somebody's home because they need to like access their house with a wheelchair or whatever. Like those are the things that like I think a big piece in why like I just want to have you on and just like talk about this stuff is because like we've been exposed to it, right? And a lot of people have been exposed to it when it happens to their family or to someone they love, right? But like the average person isn't exposed to the unfortunate side of this, and I think the more caring and empathetic we are in regards to all like this type of stuff as a humankind can be really beneficial, right?
Just the intricacies of it. I mean, one thing that I, ever since I was in PT school, notice is every time I'm at a restaurant, I'm like, this bathroom is not handicap accessible. And even if it is, it really isn't half the time. Is there enough turning radius for a wheelchair? Where's the setup between even just the position of the toilet paper within the stall of like, okay, this is a handicap bathroom, but the toilet paper is all the way over there. Or just the size of the door to get in. Okay, yeah, we have a stall that could fit a wheelchair, but you can't even get into the bathroom. So,
It's pretty wild, right?
mind-boggling.
And so, like, let's talk about where we are currently failing people when it comes to post stroke or neurological care. Where do you think, and these aren't like, I mean, these are criticisms, but they're not like specific criticisms anybody. They're like criticisms of the system that we've created over the past 30 years, right? And you can name names of people. I don't know. I don't think you need to.
I mean, I just think the preparation is off, where, you know, there's Only so much we can control with length of stay. I mean, what we've even expressed today is like there's all of this that we have to tackle, but prioritizing for discharge home and setting up someone for success at home, I think is where we fail the most because it and it doesn't even have to just be the therapists or the model of the care. It's the scheduling, just scheduling and like trying to get a caregiver in the hospital to train them, what, for 10 minutes to go home? Like just to get them on the schedule is always tough. So I think that huge transition between where you have an army in patient and then you go home and you're on an island by yourself, there's too big of a jump, unfortunately. And we try to bridge that with home care services, but it's not the same. There it's you cannot compare the care that you get when everyone is in the same place at the same time in a hospital in a very controlled place with a bed that moves up and down and someone pushing you in your wheelchair wherever you have to go, answering you with a bell, and the people take shifts so they get to go home and take a rest, to now being in your house with a wife or a husband that's taking care of you 24/7, to things that aren't made for you. And then also by someone who's never worked with someone with a stroke before. You go from experienced help to unexperienced help, and people don't have that point person to hold on to and ask questions to, even if they seem silly. But you know, I'm having a hard time navigating the kitchen. And it could just be that outside perspective of a rehab professional to say, you know, the most important things, bring them down to eye level so you don't have to reach up into cabinets and risk falling. That's like a huge thing that we teach patients, but unless you have someone to tell you that, you're not going to think of something as easy and simple as that. So I think that transition between inpatient and outpatient is the biggest issue in our, you know, current model.
Well, because it's even when it's kind of done poorly, the inpatient is still a lot more care than people are going to get at home, right? And there's a lot, it's a lot, it's definitely set up a lot more for people to be relatively safe. Right. And to actually, to some extent, do things right. Whereas, like, if you go home, like, some people just get into a chair or they get into a bed and then they never leave. Right. And because they're either afraid or they don't have the capacity to move. Hopefully, they've gotten past that point. Right. And so, yeah, it's wild. Like, we've talked about this a little bit, but like, strokes are not something that most people are like ever necessarily, me and you do, we probably like, oh God. But how do we manage, like, what are the risks, what are the things, the factors that, you know, contribute to strokes? There's not one causal factor, obviously, for, you know, there's not a singular cause. There are to some extent in some cases, right? But like, what are the things that people can do to, you know, take care of themselves on the front end? Because even then, like, I worked with a guy one time who was really strong and a very fit guy, had a stroke. Him being really strong and fit helped him re with recovery, but he still had a freaking stroke and he still had a pretty significant deficits that took a long time to get back, right?
So
So
those
it's
are the
hard.
things that like we can't control. Like, so say for instance, you have a genetic disposition to people in your family who have had stroke, or you have a clotting disorder, or you have a PFO in your heart. So like you have a hole in your heart that's sending out clots. Like those are things that you really can't, you have a surgery and there an embolus leaves and goes and gives you a stroke. Like those are things we really, those are complications and things that we can't control. But typical healthy lifestyle is a huge thing that prevents stroke, heart attack, all that. I mean, stroke is very related to any cardiovascular event as well, because a stroke is a CVA, cerebral vascular accident. It's something vascular. So anything that really would be good for heart health is also good for stroke prevention. So, for instance, healthy habits, not smoking, not drinking, or at least reducing those things, exercising daily, having good blood pressure and minimizing high cholesterol, managing diabetes, all of those big, very commonly known comorbidities or, you know, diseases that people present with. Now, I feel like it's, we kind of refer to them in the hospital as like, oh, it's an unhealthy chart. You know, it's like those all those things that kind of all come together as huge things that'll put someone at a higher risk for having something like a stroke. And then kind of like you said, when you have, we always predict about returning back to prior level of function. So if your prior level of function was walking maybe 500 steps a day in your house, it's, that's what we're predicting you to get back to afterwards. So, because we can only, I mean, and that you're lucky if you're going to get there with, you know, many other complications that can come along with being an unhealthy person, but, or someone who has all of these comorbidities. So I think, because of our, a huge reliance in like, the world today on medications and just managing symptoms versus really making lifestyle change to manage our health is like a huge thing that would help prevent the risk of having something as serious as a stroke happen.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm with you. It's like, I mean, I'm a physical training guy, but I wholeheartedly believe like a lot of people should go work in nursing homes. Like we should make it like mandatory. I can't say that. Go work in nursing homes, go empty bedpans. Like, and it's not that people like choose to get sick, right? I think it just, when you've seen it enough and you like, I know that people can get healthier. It just takes a lot of freaking work.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you have to kind of believe that you can do it. Right. And like, I've seen nurses who don't believe that they can get healthy. Right. Despite that, when you look at them from a 10,000 foot view, it's like, well, look at your lifestyle. And you work a hard job, but you know, you don't manage any of the factors that you can manage. Right. But you said it, like the biggest predictor after injury is of where you're going to get to is where you were before. Right.
Yeah.
And what you can potentially get to. Right. And the bigger your capacity was previously, the better off you're probably going to be, right?
Exactly.
So like, let's talk about,
and you know, but I'm just going to stop you quick. I think this is something I've always mentioned too. When you need help, the more unhealthy you are, the harder it is for other people to take care of you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always, even just a height, that you don't even have to be, we're talking about size or weight or whatever. But when I was working with a big person, 6'4", big heavy guy, compared to like a little old grandma, 5'1", I could do way more with the 5'1" little old grandma than the big 6'4". So just imagine having extra weight on you and all these other things that we have to worry about, your skin checks, blah, blah, changing on a bedpan. So like, if we're thinking just being like healthy weight wise, unfortunately, the more unhealthy you are, the harder it is to take care of you. And
yeah,
not that you're going to get worse care, but care is going to take a lot more effort.
Well, there's a reason that they call it like burden of care, right? Because there is like, yeah, it's, you know, yeah, I think you hinted at like the reason that I think people should go take care of people, so know why it's so important to take care of yourself. And it's not to say that you're going to prevent everything by taking care of yourself, but it is like, if there's ever a time when I'm like, I don't want to go work out, it's like, I think back to, you know, rolling people in their bed or walking people who, you know, had strokes or had, and it's hard, but man, it puts shit into so much perspective for you. Right.
Yeah.
So, and then like, yeah, it's just, there's also just kind of a gratitude for when you can move well.
Good
right.
Things, yeah.
And that's not always the easiest thing for us to reconcile, because it's like, well, you're kind of using somebody else's pain to feel, but it's just an appreciation for like, if I have this, I'm, and like somebody out there is not able to move the way I am. So I am very grateful for that. Right. Yeah, it's just, people just don't see it. Right. We don't talk about it. We don't show it. And when we do show it, it's like, it's only like the major comeback story that went well type of thing. Right.
Yeah.
So when you're like, how long can people make progress after stroke, because this is a big, and it there's definitely a spectrum. There's definitely, you know, differences in where the stroke was and how bad it was and all sorts of things. But let's just say, you know, let's take, I don't want to sensationalize it too much. Take somebody you've seen that had pretty big deficits and how far they were able to come back. Like that was what we would hope to have happen. Or have you had that happen? That type of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I would say that usually when people ask me that question, I take it kind of in two parts, because people, just like people with brains in general, with a body, no matter your condition, whatever you're struggling with, whatever current level of function you're at, if you practice something and do it every day, you will progress in that thing.
Yeah.
So aside from thinking about neuro recovery, just improving your ability to walk, move, better endurance, better strength, any person who works on that will get better. So for someone with a stroke, it's the same thing, where if you work on your strength, if you work on your balance, if you continue to challenge yourself and challenge your body and mind, you are going to get better. Now, from a neurologic recovery, typically it's always like you will have the most recovery. So we will see the most dramatic change within the first year, because so much of that is spontaneous recovery. And also you're starting, it's kind of like you're at the beginning of a skill. So just think, if you're like really trying to get good at running or weightlifting, you see huge gains right in the beginning, because you're going from nothing to something.
Yeah.
And same thing like neurologic recovery too, where you're starting from so low and you're making big improvements. So typically the biggest improvement, so like the quickest slope, is in the beginning, the first year. But there's progress to be made forever. I mean, neuroplasticity isn't just a thing for people with brain injury. It's for everybody. So your brain is just it is struggling to do it more efficiently when it is injured, and there's maybe less healthy brain tissue to have neuroplastic changes. But someone who has had a stroke can see progress for their lifetime.
Yeah.
As long as they're doing those things to drive change and drive improvement.
Yeah. Do you read any like Norman Doidge? Have you read like The Brain That Changes Itself?
Oh yes, I did read that.
Okay. I think it's not, is it Norman Doidge?
I think I read it a long time ago though, so I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the underlying principle of The Brain That Changes Itself is like, with like, usually this is the thing about humans, is like frustration is actually what helps us change the brain. Like literally when you brush up against the edge of your capacity and you start to get frustrated is when you make change. Right. Yeah. But guess how much we actually enjoy like being like that way. Right. Until you learn to like that type of thing where you're frustrated. Right. Because I do. Yeah. I used to. People would be like, well, you got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I'm like, what the hell does that mean? But it really is like, you got to get good at leaning into the challenge that's in front of you. Right.
Yeah.
So the brain that changes itself is like, there's books that it's like, if something were to happen to me, that this is kind of my philosophy in life in general. It's like, if something were to happen to me, I would look for any example of somebody who like got back or who like did it well, who recovered well, right? Or who succeeded. And a lot of it was like, The Brain That Changes Itself is just that, you know, your brain is really good at, if we used to think, did you know that Broca's area is actually like kind of a BS concept? Like it, like I just learned.
Really?
Yeah. Like Broca's area is not like, just because you have a stroke in Broca's area does not, like, it's, there's just, your brain is more complicated than that little glob being responsible.
That little blob, yeah.
This being responsible for like your expressive, it's expressive, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah, right. So I if you want a good book, How Emotions Are Made, is, I'm listening to it right now. And it's the same stuff. It's like,
I'll write it down.
How Emotions Are Made. Because I actually think neuroscience or neuroplasticity is the foundation of everything. Like
for sure.
That's my optimism. That's my optimism about people is based on, well, neuroscience. Like, you can change. It just takes a lot of repetitions. It takes being in a different environment, right? And that's also the cool thing about, I mean, when you're working with somebody in the hospital or in like the rehab gym, they're in an environment where if they see people working hard and they see people succeeding, it might push them a little bit more, right? Whereas like when you go home and it's you and nobody else in the TV, it's like, ooh, am I gonna figure out how to keep going here? And that's really tricky too, right?
Yeah. And I think even just as clinicians and coaches, we can kind of be seen as like the role model here, but this is stuff I struggle with too, as just a human. I mean, with like, for instance, I pay a good amount of money to go to Orange Theory. I love Orange Theory though. I love working out. I hate getting there. And it's very hard for me to get motivated to get off my couch and go after I have a long day of work. But being there with a coach, with good music, it's like someone who's pushing me to do it and seeing other people work really hard helps me versus me doing a home workout. Like I give you all the credit for getting in a really strong, hard home workout, because you really have to act. You're in an environment that's meant to be cozy. And like now you're making it.
My garage is not meant to be cozy. Just to let you know, my garage is meant to be like, but there is, so there's all these ways to manipulate yourself. And I use that word like jokingly, but it is, it's like, what do? I grab a Fresca, which is probably not the most advantageous thing in the world, but I like, so when I don't feel like working out, I try to put as many incentives into it as I can. Right. So it's like, I crank music. I actually keep Frescas in my neighbor's garage, and my neighbor lets me come in there, because otherwise I would just chain drink Frescas all day. And I know like artificial sweeteners, people can shit on that, but they're fine. Right. And I'm not like, but then I legitimately love, I love training. Like it's something that makes me feel good, and it makes me a better person, but I've attached all this meaning to it. It doesn't mean that there's definitely, I'd like, you know, there's phases where I don't want to go do it, but then I go do it and I'm so thankful I did. Right. Well, it's been ingrained. I'm 36 and I've been doing it since I was 15 years old. Right. And, a lot of that came from insecurity and like wanting to look or wanting to be a certain way. And now it's just something that, I know that my kids are going to model my behavior.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to be something that they feel like takes anything away from them. I want it to be something that like is additive. I think that's one of the rules of, I think this isn't a critique of health professionals, but I do think the more you can model optimistic behavior about your health and trying, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. Just always trying to do something new and different for yourself, even if it's not like exercise related, but just like
learning
to life in general.
Yeah, just reading, learning, like doing crossword puzzles, you know, like, because that's the stuff that people don't think about either in this type of process, where you're gonna have to change the things that bring you entertainment or joy, right? Like maybe you were really into gardening. It doesn't mean you shouldn't go back and try to garden, right? But maybe you need to cultivate some other, cultivate, that's a pun, other habits. Like, yeah, so I can't garden for as long as I like to, but I can I've started to take up like cross stitch. I'm just thinking of all the old ladies that,
yeah,
right? it's really powerful to have things to look forward to, and I honestly look forward to like a workout at this point, right? So when it comes to in NeuroThrive, right, which is your business, what are you trying to do with people that they would not otherwise get out of the rehab process that's currently underway?
I think there's two main things that I really seek for people to get from working with me. And it's one, me, so that you are able to have someone in your back pocket that's educated and has an expertise in the things that you are struggling with, so that you don't feel alone and that you feel empowered to be able to do things, where you almost get the right, you get the check mark to say, go ahead, let's try it. Or if you want to try it, we can do it a certain way so that if you want to get better at something, you have the ability, but you know that you're doing it in the right way. So you're more likely to be successful. And then that takes a lot of fear out of movement and out of progress and all of that because you have. It's like having your calling your mom for help where you just have that person that you know that okay, I trust that person to give me that the guidance to get to where I want to be so that I can accomplish what I can. Where I mean typically in the outpatient sense and just life in general, I mean how hard is it to contact a doctor? Like I just want to talk to my doctor and like I get reception, I gotta wait and how many phone tag happens. But you have that point person to be able to reach out to, which makes the process of improving and starting a new habit and getting into a healthier lifestyle easier. And I think the second thing is it being very self-directed and autonomous, where so much, I mean, specifically in this population, as I mentioned before, there's a loss of autonomy, there's a loss of independence. And this, we work together. I don't work for you. You don't work for me. You're not doing this so that I can get something out of it. We are literally a team so that when you make goals, they're goals that you know about and you know exactly how to get there and you're the person working to do them. It's I'm giving you the keys to get there and the I'm basically the GPS telling you how to get there, but you have to actually drive the car and get there yourself. So I think it pulls people away from that victim mentality, the mentality of I can't do things for myself, and it gives back that control that I was talking about, where they're the one that's physically choosing to do it, following the plan, and going through with the plan to make those big changes and meet the goals that they set for themselves. So it that autonomous nature of rehab coaching with NeuroThrive kind of emulates that.
I always say I'm just helping make decisions, right? It's like which is actually like super, super valuable, right? And I think because like it's not gonna stick if people don't do it, right? And it's not gonna, and that's the tricky part too, is people will go and they might get some rehab, but I'm sure you've seen repeat customers. That's a big
Yeah, of
problem
course.
in any of the rehab spaces, the neuro space. Not that they had strokes, but that they had a stroke and then they come back to the rehab hospital after the fact because they're falling or XYZ, right? So yeah, I think like you're 100% on it, that the autonomy and the self-direction is key. I had a really good question in my brain that I was going to ask you before we started, and that we've gone down this pathway, but it's essentially, what? Oh, this is what it was. Okay. Sorry. This is going to be like a little scary, but
I'm a little
like if a loved one, say your parent has a stroke, right? They have a pretty serious stroke, affects they have a right-sided stroke. So they have a stroke in the left side. They have a right-sided stroke. They can't move their right side of the body very well. They're kind of debilitated. What are the things that, like, you as somebody that knows what you know that you're really going to emphasize to your parents as they try to recover, right? Because the reason I like ask, because I kind of ask myself this question all the time. It's like, if this person was my parent, what would I like try to impart upon them so that, like, this is, I just think it's like you put yourself in the shoes of I'm going to be helping in this care team, right? Or in this care process long term. But like, yeah, what are the things that you impart to your parent, and like, how do you then try to help them plan out the future as best you can?
I think providing them with expectations of what different phases of their care and that evolution is going to look like, so that they're more mentally prepared for what they're going to have to undergo at different stages, and what things we may run into as problems that are just problems that we can end up fixing. So
Yeah.
no problem, you know, there are things that we're not going to be able to fix. Like we can't just wave a ma magic wand and, you know, things are fixed. But, you know, as you're going through the hospital process, the discharge process, getting equipment, I think just setting expectations for understanding, okay, at this point in time, this is where I'm going to be, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what it's going to be like forever. And that doesn't mean that it's just going to also increasingly get better. We're going to have bumps along the road. But as long as there's that expectation, I think that that sets someone up to have their mental health and their expectations of what life and what the process is going to be like a little bit better. And then also the importance of always including them and being a voice for not just themselves, but you know, having me as their family member or other people within their care team really vouch for them because you know, so many things get thrown at you, but
Yeah.
you can't get lost when the care, even, you know, there's so much going on, but you don't want to get that person to get lost through all of that. So
Yeah.
always making sure that they don't feel like they're losing their voice in their own care.
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge. I gotta go like take a walk because I'm like having like my own like
Existential.
angst like because it's so freaking hard. Like it's so hard, right? And it's there's such amazing people, whether it's that, you know, I remember a lady like God, we should like debrief this. I remember a lady that she had a pretty severe stroke and she it was like a left hemorrhagic stroke, and she was pretty much like flaccid on the right side, and she was aphasic. And you know, we were in there and we were working on transfers, and you know, then you know, OT would come in, and I just remember like I'll never forget the look of like just fear on her face, like just the overwhelm and like just like is this ever gonna get like better? And not being able to communicate, right? It was so hard. And it just crushed me. I can still see it. So like it gives me these feelings, which are good. Like I should have those feelings because that's a human life right there, right? And I have no idea where that lady's at. I remember we discharged her. Unfortunately, we probably discharged her way too freaking soon to a facility that probably wasn't outfitted as best it could be. But yeah, that was just it's huge. Like does that get you in your feels?
I think, I mean, I worked through COVID
Yeah.
where I was removed from my rehab position and thrown into acute care where I was in ICUs taking care of people on vents for like 3 or 4 months. And, you know, going from being in rehab where I'm always that therapist that asks, what do you want to do today? What's your goal today?
Yeah.
Always involving the person in that choice. And then, you know, you go to that setting where there are people who are way sicker. They're not even awake, but still recognizing that they're human and they have a right to understand
Yeah.
what's going on. You know how
Yeah.
many people I walked in and they were scared shitless? Like they're looking at me and they, you know, the small piece of contact that they had was, you know, the nurse coming in for 2 seconds to get them their meds, basically throwing it at them and leaving because we didn't know what the heck this thing was. And I'm
Yeah.
going in there for a 45-minute long session with them. And
Yeah.
it's finally I have a human to speak to and they're scared that they're never gonna be able to see their wife again. Like that is kind of like what you're reminding me of, is that like actual fear that I saw on people's faces.
Yeah.
And I'm scared too. And we're kind of just navigating it together
Yeah.
and just noticing that, you know, there's a per it's a person with a
Yeah.
family and a whole life, and you're that person that's supposed not to take care of them, but you're their answer right now to a lot of their issues, even if it's tiny. So, you know, I think unfortunately the way that the hospitals are and like the way that insurance is it doesn't account for the time that's needed to make to take care of people. Like it takes a lot of time. I don't want to have to rush this conversation that I'm having with you because, you know, I've only got you for an hour And you need 20 minutes to just debrief with me about what's going on mentally. And now, oh, you know what? We're only going to be able to work out for 40 minutes now because we spoke for 20. Like,
I know, and it's such a bullshit thing because sometimes what people need is that 20 minutes or 30 minutes of just debriefing and processing, right? And there's no way to make humans into cogs, right, or widgets and any of that type of thing where it's like we're just treating people like there's like a it's we're ser we're rendering this service that is it's so messy, right, and making it clean and is not it's not easy, and I don't even think it's doable, right?
I mean, that was a huge reason why I ended up I had to leave the hospital, because it just like it didn't fit with my ability, my morals and my ethics of how I wanted to treat people. Because I have a patient, they need to use the bathroom. If that was my mother, my father, my friend that needed to use the bathroom, what am I gonna say? I'm gonna say, you can wait 20 minutes because the nurse is behind 10 patients. So you're gonna have to wait for the nurse to come and take you to the bathroom. No, I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna help the patient onto the toilet. And you know what? They may take 15 minutes, because that's a normal thing to do. Is if you have to use the bathroom, you don't want to rush. And you know what? Then I have to answer to someone that says, well, you didn't get a full 15 minutes because it's been 15 minutes in the bathroom with the person. It's like, well, what was I supposed to do? Crap your pants and let's walk? No. And you know, I hear from so many people too. How did you do that? You held people to the bathroom, you wiped people, you changed people. What am I going to let them just sit there?
Yeah.
It's like you see the human behind them, and some people don't get that. And too many people don't get that. And
Dude,
I think just like seeing for people for who they are, like in their most vulnerable state, it's an honor, and it's very, very humbling to experience that with people. It's so raw. And when they trust you in that, like there is no better feeling on this earth. Like God placed us in this position to help these people. Like it can make me emotional just thinking about it, because of how much I've been able to help people, even with the slightest thing like that of, oh my God, thank you for helping me get my bra on. I feel like a regular person today. So I think that is really what makes us like rehab professionals so much different than other people. It's like things like we understand how much that those little things in life have so much meaning to people. And us being able to give that back to people, even if it's just through a conversation, is so empowering. And like, just like I said, humbling to be able to, that someone trusts us to help them through that.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote about this the other day. It's my first ever night shift as like a nursing assistant. I had a lady in a bed who had C. diff, and we cleaned her up like 7 times. And I was like, I started to ask myself, like, is this worth it? But like what you do when you work jobs like that, is you start to really just see how like humans are not fragile. Humans are super resilient and super capable of, right? But like, it also is, life is really hard, and just being kind to another human being in spite of the fact that, and also people are assholes. Like people treat medical professionals like shit, right? But it doesn't do me any good to treat them back like that. It's literally like it's just stooping to the level. And like most people are just scared and afraid and, you know, probably kind of damaged, right? But like there is a lot of power in, there's a lot of, I don't even want to say power. It's you're 100% right. Like learning that they're that or being there in for somebody when they're so low and you're just trying to help them just have a little bit of dignity in a really low period of time is really powerful, right? And it can literally be a turning point for people, you know, moving in the direction of a better way, right? Or but it's not easy for sure. So see, this is the power of it too. We got like 50 minutes in before I got to a really, you know, juicy question, but like that's it's just humans are hard. I think we're messy, and I think we just keep it, we make it so we're not messy. We like think we're not messy, right? But we are. So
And that kind of goes back to the whole healthcare model. Like it's not as simple as referral, eval, treat two times a week for 12 weeks and see her around. Like there are so many more layers than that. And I mean, even school teaches you like this is a person who has a knee replacement. It's like, no, the person doesn't just have a knee replacement. They also have a heart. They also have a brain. Like
Yeah.
there's all these other things that kind of go into taking care of a human as a whole.
Yeah.
And it's a lot. There's a lot to do.
Yeah. No, 100%. It's crazy. It's it is just infinitely it and this is like where my optimism is like tragic because it's like all those things are there's opportunities to help people because of the messiness, right?
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, it's just not simple. And, but I like honestly, it all kind of comes back to like I appreciate that there's people like you out there that want to help people post stroke. I want to help people not have strokes. I think they're both one and the same. Those are both meaningful and helpful, right? Because there's always gonna be. I don't think we're ever gonna get to a point where people don't have strokes. I think
No,
hopefully we get better at it, but
unfortunately.
I don't know if that's true. Sam, where can people find you? And yeah, pitch yourself here.
Well, you can find me very easily on Instagram at Dr. Sam, drsam.neurothrivept. You can easily also find me on Facebook. I have a Facebook page. It's NeuroThrive, Neurologic Physical Therapy and Wellness. You can DM, message, post, whatever you'd like. And then also just my email, drsam.neurothrivept@gmail.com. Super, super easy. It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
Don't be shy, afraid. Just another thing, we are just humans too.
Yeah.
I'm
Yeah,
just a
100%.
human.
Yeah, you're just a human trying to help other humans, right? In a way that you believe in, right? And that's the hard part too. Like you start to venture from the traditional model and like people are like, "Well, can that even work?" And it's like, "Well, it can I think it can work and I damn sure hope it does because if what we're doing right now ain't working, right?" So, no, I love it. So I'll link those things and this has been fun. I appreciate you. And
I appreciate you. It was awesome.
I hope it was enjoyable.
Yes, it definitely was. I could talk for probably another 5 hours with you.
I think we could keep going deeper and deeper. I'm trying not to turn this into a 4-hour podcast, but like it's crazy because like just the first 45 minutes, it's like you are like starting to get into the stuff. It's wild. But no, I appreciate you a ton and have a great Friday.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Dave.
Peace. Bye.
Bye.